So what did you do on your summer vacation? If you've never watched that show, you honestly have missed one of the funnest shows that was ever on television. That was a clip from Phineas and Ferb and two boys that decided to make the most out of summer. And so they took every day of summer, and it always started off with they were going to know what they were going to do that day. They were going to build something. And most of the time it was pretty outrageous, and it drove their sister crazy, and it was just one of the most awesome summer shows I've ever seen. I have to confess, my kid got me addicted on it, and I would actually sneak and watch episodes after they went to bed. That's okay. So this morning, summer vacation is our theme, and most importantly, what I learned on my summer vacation. Now, this isn't what I learned at Myrtle Beach, because honestly, the only thing I learned at Myrtle Beach was how to lay on our little tubes and float around our little river with my eyes shut and sleep. Okay, I didn't learn a lot at Myrtle Beach, but I've been kind of sitting on this for about 3 or 4 weeks because we got back from the North American Christian Convention, and while we made mention of it, I didn't say a whole lot about what I had learned because I was saving it, because I wanted to share this sermon with you guys, because this is what I learned when we went down to Cincinnati, when we went over and up to Cincinnati during that week, and it really does start with new math. Summer vacation and math don't seem to go together, but I had an arithmetic lesson when I was in Cincinnati, and just to kind of help you with this, I'd like to ask you some questions. Which would you rather have? If I was handing out money today, would you rather have $1 or $99? If you opened up your bag of M&Ms, would you rather have one M&M or 99 M&Ms? You'd rather have the 99, unless you're like me and you're allergic to chocolate. 99 M&Ms aren't good. So let's bring it a little closer to home. Would you rather have one scoop of Nancy's dirt pudding, or would you rather have 99 scoops? Well, obviously, you'd rather have 99 scoops, wouldn't you? Hey, sports season's getting ready to happen. Would you rather have your team score 99 points or 1 point? 99. The answer is always 99 because we know math, don't we? 99 is greater than 1. That's the way it works. They taught us that probably somewhere around 3rd or 4th grade, maybe even early. Maybe they teach it in kindergarten these days, I don't know. But 99 as a fact is bigger than 1. It's greater than 1, except for when you're using God's math. God's math doesn't work this way. Go ahead and turn with me, if you will, to Luke chapter 15, verses 1 through 7, and we're going to take a little lesson in godly mathematics, new math. This is how the story reads. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathered around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers and the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Kind of a familiar story, but you can see those numbers popping off of the page at you. But before we talk about the numbers, let's talk about the situation. You see, Jesus is standing in a mixed crowd. Now, when I call it a mixed crowd, I mean he's got some religious people and he's got some not-so-religious people. And they call the not-so-religious people, they call them sinners. These are probably the tax collectors and the prostitutes and the people that were undesirable, maybe the lepers and the people that were in need of heaven. And they all kind of fit in this bucket called sinners. And while there was a mixed crowd there, we need to know that, well, everybody came to hear Jesus. They all had something in common. At that very moment in time, every single one of them had gathered around just because they wanted to hear what this man named Jesus had to say to them. And as they began to look around at one another, well, it happens, doesn't it? There were complaints. The verse says that there was some muttering going on. That's when you whisper underneath your voice and you're talking like this. We know what a complaint is. It's to express dissatisfaction or annoyance about a state of affairs or an event. They were complaining. Well, it's because, well, the religious, they saw themselves more valuable than the sinners. They looked at their life and how well they were doing and how much they loved God. And they looked at these people that had no interest in God and had just kind of come to see the sideshow and see what Jesus was going to do next. And they saw themselves more valuable than the sinners. And so they began to complain about the fact that the sinners even showed up. And so, well, they found out very quickly, Jesus' value system, it works a little different. The math doesn't work the same way that we think about it. So Jesus decides, I'll tell you a story. I'll give you an object lesson and see if you can catch on to what I'm telling you. And so he tells this story, and it begins with a main character, and it begins with a shepherd. Did you know there's an official job description for a shepherd? I did not know this until I went looking on the internet. And since I found it on the internet, it has to be true. I found it at the Labor Department, so I'm going to trust that this is the official job description for a shepherd. A shepherd's primary responsibility is the safety and welfare of the flock. According to the Mountain Plains Agricultural Service, the shepherd will graze the animals, herding them to areas of good forage and keeping a watchful eye out for poisonous plants and predators. Shepherds live among the sheep. They often work in isolated areas and work independently except when assisted by a herding or guard dog. Shepherds must be on call for their animals around the clock. And as the sheep eat all the forage in the area, the shepherd will move both the sheep and his living quarters to fresh range. In most cases, the shepherd with his dogs will move the sheep out to fresh grazing each day and bring them back to bed down in the same area each night. Now, I'm a city boy. My experience with sheep has only one experience, and that's when I was trying to round some up for a living manger scene. Another story for another day. Didn't go well, though. But here's what I do know about shepherding. It's a ton of work. Because you got all these little sheep, and sheep aren't the most intelligent creatures in the world. And it's your job as the shepherd to watch over these sheep and get them moving from one place to the other and examine their lives and look at them and make sure they're not doing anything to harm themselves. That's the job of a shepherd. And I guess I have to ask you, that story I read, was the shepherd in the parable a bad shepherd? Well, if you look at the department's definition and what the labor department said, then yes, he was a bad shepherd because the sheep herder was supposed to be there for the flock. And here is this crazy shepherd, and he leaves his flock and he's chasing after this one little lost sheep, and he's going to leave 99 sheep sitting there. Of course, if you listen as Jesus told the story, and to the audience Jesus was talking about, the answer was no. I mean, it just seemed to make common sense that if you lost a sheep, like little Bo Peep, you would go look for it. You would have to have the lost sheep as well. So that little blank that answers that question, that's a question you'll have to answer for yourself. Was the shepherd doing his job or not? You see, in God's eyes, 100 minus 1 equaled 0. The idea that I was supposed to have 100 sheep and now I had only 99, 100 minus 1 means I've got nothing. Jesus' idea was that it was proper for him to go look because every sheep was valuable, even the lost one. That was the point. So let's talk about this flock, because I'm real concerned about this flock, because honestly, I'm part of the 99. I want to know what right the shepherd has to leave me standing out in the middle of nowhere. And the first thing I want you to see is he didn't abandon him. He didn't abandon the flock. He had plans to return. They were a healthy flock. There was probably a mix of older and younger sheep, and they knew how to eat, and they knew how to drink. They knew what they were supposed to be doing. They were sheep. Although sheep aren't intelligent, they do know the basics of life. Well, they were a healthy flock. They were left in a safe place. Jesus says they were left in the open country, where there would have been plenty of food, where predators could have been seen for miles away. Didn't say he took the dog with him to find the lost sheep, so maybe he left a little protection behind for them. But he left them in a safe place. There was a trust factor. You see, this shepherd knew his flock wasn't going to wander away while he was out looking for this lost sheep. This shepherd knew that the older sheep would take care of the younger sheep. They wouldn't let anything happen to the flock. You see, a shepherd that can never take his eyes off the flock, it says much about several things. It tells us something about the job he's doing. I mean, if a shepherd can't trust his flock, then obviously the shepherd hasn't taught his flock correctly. He hasn't created a healthy flock. It says a lot about the sheep's willingness to listen, learn, and grow. If the shepherd always has to micromanage what's going on, if the shepherd always has to say, okay, now it's time for you to eat, it's time for you to drink, if they can never figure it out, then the sheep are not listening, the sheep are not learning, the sheep are not growing. It says a lot about the flock's sustainability. I mean, how is it going to work in the long run? How can the flock ever grow if the shepherd has to maintain everything? See, Jesus and his math and God's math, 99 equals 1. These 99 individual sheep had to stop looking at themselves as individual sheep and start looking at themselves as one flock that was on a mission to save a lost sheep. And they had their part to do too. While the shepherd was out looking, the flock, well, it was going to have to work together. So let's talk about this little lost sheep. First thing you need to know is meant to be part of the flock. It wasn't a renegade sheep. It wasn't a sheep that just was kind of gone and went and bought. It was probably a sheep that was a child of another sheep, a lamb of another sheep. It was meant to be part of the flock. It was supposed to be there. It was noticed when it was gone. It was lost. Kind of obvious. But when I say it was lost, the shepherd didn't know where it was, and neither did it. It had no idea how to get back to where it was supposed to be. It was alone. It had wandered off all by itself, and there it was in the great big bad world with all of this surrounding, and it was all alone. It was small. You're probably thinking about, how do I know it was small? Well, because I can read the story, and it says when the shepherd found the sheep, he placed it on his shoulders and took it back. And unless your first name is Incredible and your last name is Hulk, then you have to have a small sheep. Because if you put a full-grown sheep on your shoulders, you're going down. They're pretty big. So it was small. And so you wind up with a lost sheep that's alone and small. And guess what that means? It means it was in danger. You know what you call an alone lost sheep out in the middle of nowhere? Dinner. It was going to get eaten. And so the shepherd began to look at his flock, and this one little sheep was missing. And well, he decided that minus one equals an infinity. It equals an infinite search that I'm going to go on. I'm not going to stop until I find this little lost sheep. Nothing else becomes more important. It is going to be an infinite search, never ending, until I find my sheep. That's a pretty valuable sheep, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of risk here. There's 99 others you're supposed to be worried about, shepherd. Where's your head? Well, he finds his sheep. And of course, there's some celebrating that says he was rejoicing. He's probably jumping up and down. He was happy. He was ecstatic. He was excited because he found this one little lost sheep. And I want you to notice, what's the first thing he did? He said he put him on his shoulders and he went home. He returned to his flock. He brought the lost sheep back to the found sheep. That's an interesting move. I mean, the found sheep were probably kind of upset at this little lost sheep because the lost sheep had taken all of the resources for a little while and nobody was paying attention to their needs. But that's what he chose to do. There was some telling that says the man called his friends and his neighbors, all excited about this one little lost sheep. And then they did a real spiritual thing. They partied. Man, they just kind of had a party over this one little lost sheep. I guess it wasn't so good for the fatted calf, huh? You know, the sheep comes home, the fatted calf loses out, because they were having a party and all the friends and neighbors came over, all because of this one lost sheep. And it's because plus one equals everything. It's because the ability to find that one lost sheep that is out there in the world all by itself that's going to perish if you don't, that means everything to a shepherd. It's important. And so then we get to the reality that Jesus lays on the religious, the ones complaining about the sinners being around. It says, I tell you the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And I got to tell you again, that statement bothers me, because I'm trying to do this life the best I can. I want to be pleasing to God. But you need to understand, it didn't say God wasn't pleased by my righteous life. It says God is pleased with a righteous life, because it says he is more pleased with a repentant heart. See, God is pleased with your righteous life, but he seeks a repentant heart. Just because you're living a righteous life, that doesn't mean that that's all there is to it. God desires a repentant heart, because it's all backwards. In God's eyes, one's bigger than 99. The quest to find the next lost sheep is more important than the maintaining of the 99. And I don't get that, because I'm part of the flock. I want to be important. But let's talk about the flock again. Their needs didn't go unmet, did they? They were left where there was food and water. He didn't leave them in a pack of wolves. Their greatest need and our greatest need was met. They were not forgotten. He didn't get his little lost sheep and run off and say, fine, I'm going to start a brand new herd of sheep and let's just forget about the 99 I left out on the plain. They can fend for themselves. They weren't forgotten. They didn't perish. He came back for them. It was all good. And here's the thing you need to remember. This flock, it was all made up of previously lost sheep. Every sheep in this flock, at some point during their life, it had the shepherd come looking for them. They were the ones that was lost and in danger and little and alone. They were in harm's way. And the shepherd had come and had them, as they had already had their day. You see the difference here? The one and the 99? See, because there's a reality. We cannot build both. Now, you're probably thinking, I just lost you. Because we were talking about sheep, and we were talking about 99, and we were talking about one, and we were talking about shepherding, and now you're talking about building. So let me clear the picture for you. When I say we cannot build both, we cannot focus on the flock and find the lost. It's impossible. Our focus cannot be the flock and the lost. Don't believe me? Read the story. The shepherd couldn't do it. And by the way, the shepherd in this story was Jesus, the great shepherd, the good shepherd, God himself. He said, I can't do it. I cannot seek the lost and deal with handling religion. It can't be done. He couldn't do it in application, because you ponder it, the whole story started because the religious people said, hey, take care of my needs, take care of us. We want you to be more religious. And he's like, I can't do that and focus on the lost. We have to pick. We have to choose what it is we're going to build, because we cannot build both. I don't care if it was a church of 9,999. I don't care if it's a church of 99. I don't care if it's a church of 50. You can't build both. And I want to show you why. Let's talk about building for the 99 for a second. Building for the 99 means that, well, your ministries, they have to become heavy with ministries that are built to fatten up sheep. They have to become heavy with ministries that are focused on the needs of the flock. That means we have to become heavy with ministries that just focus on the people sitting here. And whether we like to admit it or not, every ministry, every event, every activity we do, it consumes resources. So therefore, if we start becoming heavy with those resources, trying to just satisfy the needs of the flock, then we've created a problem. See, if we're going to build for the 99, it creates an environment that is comfortable for us. We're after creating an environment that makes me happy. It makes me satisfied. It fills my stomach. My need has been met. And we have forgotten that our need was met on the cross through Jesus. See, that's what happens. It creates an environment where we just want to be comfortable. If we focus on the 99, the entire existence, well, it centers on familiarity. Therefore, we do the same things, the same way, at the same place. Planning the calendar gets very easy because we just look at last year's calendar and we take this year's calendars and we just shift it over by a day so everything falls on the right kind of day. It gets very easy because we want to build what's familiar because we like familiarity. We like things the same way. I don't want you to change what I'm doing because I'm part of the flock and I want to be here and I want this to be comfortable for me. So we center on familiarity. And change becomes difficult. Well, the ministry's existence, this is the funny thing, it's the killer. Ministry success is evaluated on how much I enjoyed it. Think about that statement. How many times have we judged whether a church service or a worship service was good by how much I got out of it? How many times have we judged an event by how good the food was? How many times have we judged something we did by how much fun I had? And we want to do it again because, well, it was good for me. That's how we begin to judge things when we build for the 99. And there's some results that come from that. When you build for the 99, the young, immature sheep, they begin to wander away because they're looking for something that's different. And we feel real bad about it, but you know what? We really don't go chase them that hard because we're not designed for that. We're designed to be comfortable. Our flock gets older. Things begin to get a little stale, but hey, we're comfortable. Eventually, the flock passes years where they can reproduce, and well, the good news is that solves the wandering sheep issue. But you know what ultimately happens to a flock that's built for the 99? It begins to experience attrition, and eventually it dies out. That's building for the 99. Now let's talk about building for the one, because that looks quite different, and you'll see why you can't build for both, because if I'm going to build for the one, we build in ministries that are heavy in assimilation and seeking. We're looking for events that will go out into the community and find the lost sheep and minister to the lost sheep and open up our hearts and open up our minds and open up our doors and our dollars just for the purpose of finding lost sheep. Well, we understand that's going to consume resources. That's going to consume calendar dates. That means some things that we were doing probably can't be done anymore because we're going to do something different just for the sole purpose of going out and reaching one. Remember, the shepherd wasn't looking for a ton. He was looking for one. That's a big difference. And of course, you realize that means, well, change is going to be constant. That's what's going to happen if you build for one. Because of the fact when you find that lost sheep and you go looking for the next lost sheep, what will reach the next lost sheep may be different from the lost sheep that you just found, so you might have to change what you were doing to reach the next generation. But that's building for the one. Change just kind of has to be ongoing. Here's one that we have to remember. Older sheep, now note, I did not say old sheep, okay? Older sheep are a valued resource to help new sheep understand the flock life. I want to make sure you get that. Older sheep are a valued resource to help new sheep understand flock life. See the difference? Bill for 99, the flock is the target. Bill for 1, the flock is the resource. You see the difference? That means resources, what happened to resources? Well, we spend resources, we use resources to reach the target. It's a completely different philosophy. It's why you can't build for both. So this idea is that as an older sheep, as somebody that's lived in the flock for a while and you see the lost sheep come back in, then you know what? Then it's your responsibility to help that person to mingle into the flock, to help them find a place to study God's word, to help them find a place to serve. It is our jobs as the older sheep to teach new sheep how to be part of the flock. That's built for the one. That's a little different than we usually think about church. And here's the real kicker. Ministry success isn't based on whether I liked it or not. It isn't based even by the attendants sitting in the seats. We have one marker. How many new believers are following Christ? I guess if we were going to try to put it down to an activity, success is measured by baptisms. So how are we doing? That's a sobering thought, isn't it? Maybe I'm comfortable. Maybe I've got everything I want. Maybe I'm satisfied. But the question becomes, is God satisfied? Because as you can see, building for 99 is much different than building for 1. And guess what? We can't build for both. And that's what I learned on my summer vacation, because somehow in the back of my mind, I thought, you know, there's a way to do it. That you can keep everybody happy. That you can do things in such a way that the flock will be happy and people will continue to smile, and we can go look for the lost. Am I better than Jesus? No. And no matter how I want to try to put the equation out there, the fact remains I have to pick. What is my priority? Is my priority going to be feeding the flock simply for the purpose of feeding the flock so that they can be happy? Or is my purpose growing the flock by seeking the lost? And it's not just a question I have to ask. It's a question we have to ask. So which one are we going to build? What is it that is our goal here? Because I can only build one. I have to pick a model. So are we going to build for the 99? Or are we going to build for the one? Now, before you answer that question so definitively, because I know what everybody's thinking, well, of course, we want to go find the lost people. I want you to go back up to that other question. Was the shepherd a good shepherd? Yes or no? You see, if you answered yes, he was a bad shepherd, then guess what your tendency is going to be on who you want to build for? The 99. Because to you, a shepherd's job, the church's job, is all about the people that are part of the church. But if you answered that question, was it a bad shepherd, and your answer was no, because he should be out there looking for the lost, then the answer that you have to put at the bottom in that little blank by which one is, you have to put a 1. Now here's the deal. You can't put a 50. You can't go down the middle. We have to make some choices going forward. What am I building for? One of the other comments that I kind of picked up from Cincinnati was actually in the van coming home. We were riding down the road, and we were all talking about the things that we had listened to and the things that we had learned and the things that we had discussed. And somebody made the comment, you know, I don't think people understand what it is we're building. Maybe they would understand more why we're doing things if they understood what it is we're building. Well, I want to tell you, my idea is I'm building for the one. That doesn't mean we ignore the 99. It means that we encourage the 99 to get involved. It means we encourage the 99 to come along for the ride, not hang onto the pew like this is a roller coaster ride, just pray that you're going to survive it without hurling, but to actually get involved to the point that you're actually going to enjoy the ride of looking for the lost. But if you simply just try to hang on, let me tell you, it's going to make you a little sick. Because if we're going to go look for the lost, it means we're going to have to do some things that maybe are a little unorthodox. Maybe don't make the flock totally happy. And sometimes may infuriate some of the flock. But I want you to think about this. Jesus, the great shepherd. Now, notice, Jesus is the shepherd, not me. Did he ask the flock if he could go look for the one? Did he look at the flock and say, okay, let's have a vote. All of you who want me to stay, go, bye. All those who don't, go, nah. There you go. No, he didn't do that. He didn't take a vote. He simply looked at the flock. He said, you're healthy. You're good. You're in a safe place. You know what it means to live a Christian life. You know what this means. We can do this. But the church has to change its focus, and as our focus has to become about the one. Now, I can't make you come along for the ride. But I can tell you that until God comes back with a different plan, I think this is what we're supposed to be building. Building for the one. Building for the lost. Building for the people. That means everything that we do in this church, the first question we ask ourselves is, how do we reach somebody with this? I don't care whether it's going to a water park or having a fellowship supper. The first question we should ask is, how do we turn this into, how do I reach the lost with this? And if we can't come up with an answer, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be doing that. Maybe something else should go on the calendar in its place that we can use to reach the lost. You see why you can't build both? Because the two work opposite of each other. That's what I learned on my summer vacation. And the odd thing is that this message fits so well into going all the way back to Tim Cole's message where he's talking about the Jerusalem and how to go out into the world, going all the way through the inside out, taking our what's going inside of our lives and bringing it out. This just kind of fit as the magic capstone. I couldn't believe it. God, you're cool. Because we were already headed down this path and God just kind of reinforced it. Folks, we've got to think about what we're doing. We're building for the one. We're building for the opportunity to take the curtains down off the baptistry, fill it full of water, and turn it open to the world because that's the measuring stick. How many people are following Christ through our ministry? That's what we want to do. And if we're not doing that, then guess what? We're not doing it Jesus' way because he was all about the lost. During this time of decision, maybe you're here today.